This is Clark Howard on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
It's 1:06, this Labor Day weekend. I'm Elise Glink. I'm sitting in for Clark today. So glad you could join me here on News Talk WSB as we look for ways to help you spend less, save more, and avoid getting ripped off. Our number here, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I am live working on Labor Day, just like a lot of you. Others of you who are driving around listening to us on the radio, I hope you're driving safe. We're going to have weather and traffic updates throughout the show. Make sure you're getting on the roads and doing fine there. You can also, if you'd like me to pick up the cost of the call, happy to do it. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time. The website, thinkglink.com. thinkglink.com. And if you're not following me on Twitter, you are missing half the conversation. I have already begun tweeting today on what's going on. I've already got one response. My Twitter handle, @Glink, @GLINK. Lines are wide open. We are taking all of your calls today about money and real estate. I want to start by talking about what went on at Jackson Hole this week, where every year at the end of the summer, the Federal Reserve hosts a little monetary policy symposium, just a little lightweight event for all the heavyweights who are financially, you know, organized in this world. And they hold it in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And I don't know if you've ever been to the Grand Teton National Park, but it is absolutely beautiful. And so that is the backdrop for where they sit around and they talk about all this money. And what was so interesting is that this is the time where the Fed leaves D.C., heads out to Wall Street, out of Wall Street, out to, you know, basically almost as far west as you can go. I mean, it's pretty much mountains and old west country. And they sit and they talk about the economy. And what's so interesting about it is considered to be the high point of the summer in terms of understanding the second half of the year direction. And here's my takeaway. I wasn't at the conference. I've just been reading about it. And, of course, we've had the Republican convention this week as well. It's been a very, very big week. Here's my takeaway. We're in trouble. We must be right at the knife's edge of collapsing back into a recession, because what came out of this monetary policy was a promise that the Fed is going to start buying more bonds. The Fed is going to pump maybe another $1 trillion. They're going to buy as much as they need to buy, which is just going to send the stock market up, in order to put what they call, you know, jobs on the table and to keep the economy from collapsing into a recession. There, what we heard from Ben Bernanke and his colleagues is that the trillions of dollars they have spent with monetary stimulus has helped keep this economy from collapsing into another depression. I mean depression like the 1930s, not even the Great Recession that we sort of had. That was the, I guess that was the lump of coal or something. I don't know. There is, in my mind, as somebody who sits on the sideline and watches what goes on, I have to be, and you, I'm sure you are as well, just kind of wondering what it's going to take to push us one way or the other. Now, knowing the Fed is out there and they're going to just buy bonds and the stock market's going to go up and all the rest, is it sustainable? You look at what's going on in Europe, you look at even the Wall Street Journal's top story on their website about how fund managers and everybody are really concerned about what's going to happen with stocks the second half of the year. Everybody's really, really nervous. And Ben Bernanke must be pretty nervous, because when you look at the decisions they're making, they don't care about interest rates. They aren't worried about inflation. Now, 4 or 5 years ago, when they started down this path and they were lowering the interest rate and lowering the federal funds rate, There were a lot of people out there who said by this time we would have skyrocketing inflation. Hasn't happened. Hasn't happened. But as they say that now we're going to keep interest rates low through 2014, right? Through 2014, which, by the way, is when Ben Bernanke's this term expires in early 2014. Knowing that interest rates are going to stay low for another 2 years, just that alone, having that guidance, scares me. It scares me because I know we're in trouble in this country, and you can say that, oh, we created 163,000 jobs last month, but when you look at how the net worth of middle America has plummeted, it's down 39%. When you look at the fact that there are millions of people, 3 million people, who still don't have jobs from this Great Recession, who lost them and have still not recovered, and another chunk of people are now earning 20, 30, 50% less than they were. It's not a recipe for an amazing recovery. We're not having an amazing recovery, and you know that. You know that because you look at your paycheck and you compare it to your expenses, and there isn't a whole lot left. And yet, the 1%, the 2%, they're all doing fine. It's just everybody else. So I was driving around this weekend, and I was putting gas in my car. I was in the city in Chicago. I couldn't bring myself to do it. City of Chicago gas prices were almost $4.70 a gallon for regular unleaded. For the stations that I passed, I'm sure it's cheaper somewhere else. I came back out to the suburbs where I filled my tank for about, I don't know, $4.30. Now, I know in Atlanta it's a lot less expensive than this, but wow, I thought, wow, $4.40 a gallon? How are we making this work? I mean, in the city, $4.70 for regular unleaded. I mean, you're closing in on $5 a gallon. That kind of stuff is what, in my mind, takes you from being right on the edge to jumping right off. It's really close. It's really scary. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, I'm not really sure how it's all going to work out this week. I'm going to get my paycheck, and I'm going to cash it, and I'm going to do the envelope thing, and I'm going to slot this for food, and this for the kids, and this for back to school, and this for the gas money, and whatever. And you may get to an envelope like medical bills or prescription drugs, and there won't be anything left to put in that envelope this week. I'm hearing from people like that. They're telling me they don't have enough money when gas prices get above $4 a gallon. And it scares me. And it must scare Ben Bernanke, because the Federal Reserve has a history over 100 years of independence. And there they are, just trying to be politicized, or they are being politicized by the different political parties. Instead of doing independent monetary policy, they're starting to bow to the different wishes of the factions. It's terrifying. Really scary. So I look at it, and I look at all these different pieces, and I can come to only one conclusion, which is that we're right on the edge, and I really hope we're not going to fall into recession. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Taking your questions about money, saving money, spending money, investing money, not getting ripped off with money, and, of course, real estate. Because there is so much going on with real estate right now. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Joseph joins us on the line from Athens. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Happy Labor Day.
Thanks.
What's going on?
I work for a restaurant in Athens. It's actually a national chain, but they have some franchises there. And I worked for them for about 4 months, and the job was not what it was described to be when I took the job.
What was it described? What was it described to be?
It was described to be a position as a store manager for them, at a single location. And during the about 4 or 5 months I was with them, they had me travel around from Commerce to Conyers to Athens, all over, never actually managing a single location. And they had plenty of excuses. They were taking over some other stores, and they had paperwork issues, and it continued to be excuse after excuse why they couldn't put me in a store. Finally, I asked them for a date, which they couldn't give me. And they weren't paying me to travel. I couldn't continue to spend my own money on gas and upkeep of a vehicle to do that travel.
Mm-hmm.
And since they couldn't,
how much money were you spending a week on that, do you think?
Probably $100.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
A lot of money in gas, and it's not getting any cheaper.
No, as we've just discussed.
Yeah. So I left the job and told them I couldn't continue traveling. I couldn't continue doing what they had changed the position to be. I couldn't do it anymore. When I received my final paycheck from them, I was being paid a salary the whole time I worked for them. When I received my final paycheck from them, instead of it being my salary, I was paid minimum wage for the hours I worked for my last 2 weeks there.
That is incredible.
And when I called them to ask them about it, they claimed that that is what they do. If you don't give them a two-week notice that it's in their employee handbook that they pay minimum wage for the hours you've worked, I'm not sure that that's legal, even if it is in their employee handbook.
It doesn't sound legal, but I'm not a labor lawyer. We can try and find out. I'm sure there's some labor lawyers listening. They'd be happy to chat in on Twitter or, you know, email, let us know, or call in. But when did this happen?
I got my final check last week.
How did you feel about that?
Like I got ripped off.
Yeah. I can understand that.
I worked for a set wage, and then when I get my final check, it's not that amount. It's much less.
So what have you done?
I have called them, and I've contacted the Department of Labor, and the Department of Labor's the person I spoke with there said they were not sure if that was legal or not, and they had to check into it. But I have not gotten a response as of yet from them, but also wanted, you know, there are plenty of customers who visit this chain of restaurants in Athens. It's big. They have national ad campaigns and...
Well, it's not... I don't really want to start a vendetta on Clark's show. You know he doesn't like that.
Right.
But what I do think you've done is you've taken some positive steps. I think you need to put in writing, I know you've called them, but the power of the pen is pretty significant. So I think you need to document in writing what's happened. Just the way you've told me the story now. I've worked for you for 4 months. The job was never what it was set out to be. It was supposed to be this for this much money. You know, on this date, I asked you for a date of when I was going to get my store. You failed to deliver this. You have made me spend $100 a week of my own pocket money that I would never take in this job had I had to spend. Since this was not part of the advertised job, I think you should reimburse me for these out-of-pocket expenses. Here are the receipts. And now you've not paid me what you're supposed to pay me. So, you know, this is the amount that I think I'm owed. And, you know, you can take legal action by suing them in small claims court, which they won't like at all.
Okay.
So you do have some more things to do, but putting it out there in writing is really important. Documenting how somebody has treated you at a company is really important, and making sure that you're protecting your rights is incredibly important.
Okay.
What other kinds of job leads do you have?
Right this minute, not too many. I had an interview this morning with a retail company, but job market is not so good at the moment.
It's really rough out there, Joseph. I'm so sorry that this has happened to you. But I want you to fight back. I want you to document. I want you to make sure that you're protecting yourself as much as you can. I want you to follow up with the Department of Labor. I want you to make sure that this company has to respond to you in writing. Because if you end up suing them in small claims court for this, you're going to need some of that documentation. Let me know what happens. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Gling, sitting in for Clark Howard. It is 1:20. We'll be back with more in just a few on News Talk WSB. 6 minutes past the hour, this Labor Day Monday. I'm Elise Blank, sitting in for Clark. So glad you could join us today. You know, I was thinking about Joseph during the break, and it seemed incredible to me as a small business owner myself with, you know, 10 employees, that you could actually put into your handbook that if you don't give 2 weeks' notice, we're going to take you down from whatever your annual salary is to minimum wage. And hey, this is just, I'm calling out to all labor lawyers who are listening to the show. Please tweet me or send an email to elise@thinklink.com, or you can go to wsbradio.com and they'll link to me as well. Or call the show, 404-872-0750. Is this really possible that you can do it? I suppose as a small business owner, you can do almost anything, but it just, when you haven't delivered the job that was promised, I don't know. The whole thing just strikes me as being just wrong on so many levels. But again, I'm not a labor lawyer, so I don't know. I call my sister for those sorts of things. She is a labor lawyer. 404-872-0750. Lines are wide open. Before we go to break, I want to just pull back a moment and talk for just a second about something that happened to me at the grocery store this morning. We're giving a going away party for my son, Alex. He's going off to school. And I went over to buy a few last-minute things. And so she rings up the order, and she goes, oh, that'll be, you know, $150. And I just kind of looked up, and I went, wow, that seems, in my head, I'm like, that seems really expensive given what it is that I've been buying. And so I look at the last line on the thing, and it says, parsnips, $61.45. Now, those of you who cook soup know that parsnips, those long, white, skinny, they look like carrots, but they have a really fresh scent, right? There is no way that you could buy enough parsnips to cost $61. I mean, they're like 42 cents a pound. And it would just be a whole shopping basket on its own. So I said to the woman, I said, that can't possibly be right. I didn't buy any parsnips. She goes, oh, sorry, it should be watermelon. And it went from $61.40, just this one line item, down to $4.22. It was a $59 mistake. And I thought, oh my gosh, if I hadn't been paying the slightest bit of attention here, right? If you just get distracted, kids running in the aisle, somebody calls you on your cell phone, you're fishing out your credit card, I would have missed that charge and gotten home and gone, why is this so much money for a bunch of like hot dog buns? You've always got to watch. You don't watch, you're going to get scammed. You don't watch, something's going to happen, a mistake's going to be made, and it's going to cost you an extra $61. And you're going to get home, and it's going to drive you nuts. I was so glad that I caught it right there at the moment. 404-872-0750. How can I help you this Labor Day weekend? Give us a call. Find out. I'm Elise Kling, sitting in for Clark Howard. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Kling on News Talk WSB.
It's 1:36 on Labor Day Monday. I'm Elise Kling. Welcome back to the Clark Howard Show. So glad you could join us today. I've been hearing from some people on Twitter that they were sorry I wasn't on yesterday. They were really surprised that Captain Herb was on and NASCAR. You know, it's hard on those odd Sundays when we just have NASCAR. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Fall is kind of crazy around WSB. We've got football. It kind of shifts the weekend schedule just a bit. So starting this coming Sunday, I'm now going to be on 12 to 2 instead of 11 to 1, just through the football season. So, you know, watch for the week we have the bye, and I'll be back on at 11 to 1. But I'll still be there, and then Monday morning we do the replay. So if you're up at 3 o'clock in the morning, that won't change. 36 minutes past the hour, our number here at the station. I'm live today, and lines are open. So if you've been holding out, wanting to ask real estate questions, today would be the day to do that. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go to the phones. Dennis joins us on the line. Hey, Dennis.
Yes, ma'am. How are you?
You know, I'm doing okay. Happy Labor Day.
Well, happy Labor Day to you. That's the reason I'm calling.
All right, let's hear.
As I told your screen caller, I'm 59 years old, and I am fully employed at this point in a production job. I would like to start seeking other employments. I've done much more in the past than I'm doing now as far as responsibility-wise. But I'm really scared. trying to put myself in back into the job market at my age. What kind of obstacles do you think I might face at this point in my life? It's really kind of making me nervous.
So, have you really? So let's talk about the nervousness and the scared part first, because I think that sometimes there are things like age discrimination. Clearly, right? That's why we have laws against it. But sometimes I think we imagine things that aren't there. And it is, I'm going to grant you, starting right off, it's a terrible economy, because I started the show talking about how nervous I am about it. And I think there are some challenges for people who are of your age. But that said, there are also companies that really still recognize value. They may not be able to pay fully for it, but they recognize value. And those are the opportunities that you would want to find so that you could get in somewhere, prove your value, and then start to do more. Because if I'm hearing you right, Dennis, it almost seems like, I mean, money I'm sure is important, right? You still need to work for the paycheck, but you want more responsibility. You want to engage your brain a little bit more. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am, I do. You know, and when you say value, I think of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the two are the same.
I think there is a lot to be said for that. I think people who've had a varied group of experiences are hugely valuable. In fact, I've become really good friends over the last year with a guy who's in his mid-50s, and I'm desperate to be able to bring somebody like him on board. He just has the unique combination of skills and sense of humor, and, you know, just as he likes to say, I have really broad shoulders. Like, you can't put too much work on me. Like, I already know how to manage my time. I know how to produce quickly. I know how to delegate it. You know, and we're thinking about bringing him in a pretty senior capacity. And as a small business owner, I've never done that before. But, boy, I've been able to see the value. So one thing that I'd throw out there is to try and find a way to leverage your value before you've actually given up your job. Because in an economy like this one, I don't want to see you being like the 3 millionth number 1.1 person, you know, who's out of work because you decided to make this leap. I would much rather see you try and test out value by networking and trying to share your value before you even get hired. Think about it in terms of being a consultant, right? So part-time opportunities outside of the regular working day. Where else can you bring value to somebody? Have you met people along the way that you can share your experiences with, provide value to them so that they recognize it? Maybe there's another way to sort of chop this up and say, yep, there is something that I can do here for you that, you know, will either help broaden your resume, will give you some leads, will help you network within different people. That's also the kind of thing I want to see you trying.
Just give me a brief explanation of networking.
Sure. My idea of networking is all these people, you have like a regular sort of social circle, and then you've got your circle of doctors and lawyers and whoever else that you've built up in the years of professionals that you've worked with. And my feeling about networking is, number one, it's everybody you know and who they know. So LinkedIn, if you're not on LinkedIn, for example, you've got to be. And using the people that they call in your network, where it's your immediate contacts and then their contacts and then their contacts. So your immediate contacts are the ones that are sort of a first link. The next wider spread is your secondary tier and then your tertiary tier. And I have 1.2 million people in my network, my LinkedIn network. So in the real world, if you take it offline, it's your immediate network are people you know, and then people they know who might be able to help you.
I see. Okay.
And so you need to start to develop. If you're going to find a really amazing job for the next 10 years of your life or 8 years or however long it's going to be, something that's really engaging, something that is going to make you wake up and smile every day with people who make you smile, you're going to need to start to create this network and push through it to use their networking, you know, contacts to find people who can help you do this.
Okay.
So it's scary to put yourself out there. Like, you know, I'm on the radio every day, and it's still scary to me when I go into different kinds of situations that aren't the things that I do every day, right?
But you do a good job. I listen to you often.
Oh, well, thank you, Dennis. But you can do this too. You know, what I want you to understand is, even somebody like me or Clark, right, when you put us out there to do something else that's a little different, a little, you know, unique, we also get scared. And so it's a universal thing in life, right? People get scared. It's hard to feel like are you pushing too much? Are you making the right impression? Are people going to understand what you're saying to them? You know, you want to do a really good job. And so I just want to reassure you, everybody has walked that mile that you're about to walk. And the best thing you can do is just have confidence that you know what you know. And always admit what you don't know. But if you're a fast learner, admit that too. Because there are people like me who are small and medium-sized business owners who are looking for people like you. And we either don't know how to find you, or we never run across people like you. And yet, you're the kind of person with all this value and all these years of experience, you could bring a really unique solution. And I'll give you an example. So my cousin in Florida, who's 70 or 69, he always had his own business. And then Hurricane Andrew hit all those years ago, and it totally wiped him out. And he had to rebuild. And, you know, he rebuilt it kind of, and then he had some health challenges. And then one day he happened on a guy who owns, he was a foreclosure lawyer down in Florida. A lot of work, right? The guy, yep, like, had two people working for him and no idea how to run a business. Well, my cousin has run a lot of businesses and, you know, kind of started to help him out. And now the guy has 20 lawyers and four locations. And, you know, my cousin became like his office manager, but really managing the whole company, like the COO, and helped him triple his business in 5 years. And so that's the kind of experience that somebody who's in their 50s brings, right? You've already seen it, been there, done that, and you're just looking for an opportunity to sort of prove it all over again. And so I'm saying to you, it can happen, and, you know, my cousin's got 10 years on you. He's 69 or 70 years old, and he was able to do exactly what I'm describing.
Very good. You know, even though I'm 59, I'm young. I'm a young 59, and I'm healthy, and I work hard every day. And I do have all these years behind me. I just need to be able to prove it to somebody.
Well, if you don't start looking, you're never going to run across the right opportunity. But I am betting that if you start taking some steps in any direction, because, you know, if you listen to my show, you know that I'm a big fan of getting unstuck. Take a move in any direction, because any direction is a right direction compared to standing still. If you start moving, my guess, Dennis, is you will start succeeding right away. First with broadening your network, figuring out what you can do to help other people, and then understanding truly where the opportunities are going to find for you. And what I want you to do is call back and let me know what happens.
I will. You mentioned Link. Is that an actual internet?
Yes, it is. LinkedIn. LinkedIn.com.
Okay.
It's fantastic, and you need to be on it. And it's free.
Very good. I'll get on it this afternoon.
Sounds good, Dennis. Thanks so much. Have a happy Labor Day, and I hope you are happily laboring for many days to come. 46 minutes. I couldn't resist that one, folks. 46 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Will joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Will.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's going on with you?
I'm curious about something. I heard what you just said to that last guy. It was great. I'm tired of being afraid. I'm tired of listening to the news, and I'm tired of CNBC, and it's just awful, and everybody's got a solution, but nobody has a solution. And then you talk about how you're concerned that we may go over the edge. And I'm not sure what that looks like, number one, but I heard a guy the other day say that what he needed to learn was the difference in optimism and denial. And
he needed to learn optimism and denial.
Optimism and denial.
Really? What does he mean by that?
What he means is, let's face up to what's really going on. I mean, this economy that we've got, this world economy, changing it is like turning three oil tankers. It has to go very, very, very slow.
Yeah.
And you have all of these indications that this isn't working, that isn't working, this isn't going to do it. Everybody has all these wonderful solutions. But $16 trillion is a huge amount of money. Huge. I don't know how that's possible to pay that off. I'm not sure that people have the will or even the character anymore to do what everybody's going to have to suffer some pain. Everybody's going to have to take a hit. Everybody's going to have to work together or something's going to happen. I want to know what it looks like to you if it does go over the cliff, because it looks like to me that we might be on a runaway economic train, and nobody's willing to say, yep, you know, that train's going to crash.
Yeah, I'm willing to say it. I think we're, and I'll say it for a couple of different areas. With Medicare, it's 60 miles an hour, and there's a brick road, brick wall, right around the corner that we're about to run right into. Now, I don't know if that's a year away or 10 years away, but the growth of Medicare and Medicaid spending is unsustainable given the current levels of taxation. And but you can, in the state of Illinois, for example, in September, all Medicaid bills just stop being paid, and all the hospitals and doctors have to eat it for the rest of the year. That's unsustainable. And every year, that week gets moved closer to the beginning of the year than the end of the year. Okay?
Well, I'm over 65, and I have wonderful doctors, except a couple of specialists that were amazing, won't take me as a customer anymore.
That's right. My mother's doctor, who's been her doctor for 55 years, will no longer take her because his firm, he's sort of retired now, but they won't take her. Well, she can pay privately, but she can no longer be a Medicare patient. They won't take it. So you're going to see, just in the world of health care, more doctors refusing to take Medicare and Medicaid patients because they don't want to work for free. You're going to see more taxation because we simply can't afford the benefits we've promised. But nobody wants to take away Medicare because it has saved millions and millions of Americans from the poorhouse in this country, which everybody forgets, which is why we put it in there, because the number one driver of people to bankruptcy is health care costs. So until you solve health care, that's its own thing. But you asked the larger question of what does the cliff look like? And I would say it looks like the Great Depression back in the 1930s, or maybe it's just the Great Recession that we've gone through. But until we get spending and taxation back in balance, and I don't believe for 1 minute, not 1 minute, that you can cut taxes and then cut spending all the way back to balancing the budget. I just don't believe that's true. I think that's a work of fiction. I think you're going to have to raise some taxes, and you're half going to have to cut, and everybody's going to pitch in. That's the thing you said, Will. That's exactly right. We're all going to have to pitch in. But there, again, to your point, I don't think there's the will in Congress, not in a presidential election year, and I don't think there's the will of the people at the moment to do that. But I look at, you can't like have wars all over the world, and you can't, you know, provide unlimited benefits to people. You know, it's extraordinary times. People are really, truly suffering out there. But long term, it's unsustainable. So if we don't fix what's going to happen December 31st, and we go off the tax cliff, and we aren't increasing tax revenues, and we're not cutting spending, and we're not cutting the wars and figuring out where we're going to apportion our defense, I think economically we're going to be in huge trouble. And I think everybody is going to suffer big time. It's 50 minutes past the hour, 1:50 p.m. on Labor Day. So glad you could join me here. I'm Elise Glenk, 404-872-0750. Stay tuned, and I'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB. 56 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glenk. Thanks for joining us today live here at News Talk WSB on Labor Day. Yes, I am laboring on Labor Day, just like many of you. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Jeff joins us on the line from Covington. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how are you doing, Elise?
I'm all right, thanks. So it sounds like you got a job, but maybe not quite what you were thinking.
No, it's okay. I actually love it.
Okay.
Use the brain power, but needless to say, I'm contracted help, and I get a 32-hour times pay rate, and I just, no taxes are taken out and what have you.
Mm-hmm. So you're a 1099 contract employee.
Okay.
Okay, and now you're going to, that means as opposed to a W-2, right, where taxes and everything are being taken out. So do you understand what you need to set aside for taxes?
Well, right now, just based on the second contracted employee doing the same thing, and he just was basically putting aside 25%, and I figured, okay, I'll just take out 25% and put that aside in a savings account so I don't have to do any of the end-of-the-year figuring and what have you. But I was just curious about, is there a particular way when I was employed and all the taxes were taken out. I figured up with everything, and that was insurance and all that, around 24%. Just curious if maybe I'm on the right track or is there an easy way to figure it out?
So you can go to there are a bunch of 1099 tax calculators that'll help you calculate what kind of taxes. EHow.com has one and TurboTax has one, all these different things. But basically what you're looking for is you have to take out your federal taxes, your state taxes. And when you have your federal taxes, you're also paying the employer's share. So you're self-employed now. You pay, it's like an extra 16.1% because you pay the 8% plus another 8%, which is the employee's share, the employer's share. So that's really the key part of it, how it's going to come out. So I suggest you go to TurboTax or eHow.com or Ask.com. I will tweet out all of these different places, and you can see all the different line items and play around with these calculators in a way that will make it so much easier for you. My guess is it's going to be closer to 25 to 28%, maybe even 30%, than 20 to 25%, but it's going to depend on how much you make all year. 58 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Link, 404-872-0750. Back in a flash with more of your questions on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark Howard on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glenn, sitting in for Clark today. Glad you could join us here on Labor Day weekend. It's Monday of Labor Day. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Those are the numbers to call. You can also tweet me. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. If you are not following me on Twitter, you are missing half the conversation. Plus, that's where I send out all the links and the phone numbers for the show. So you're going to want to, you will need to follow me there if you're going to want to get all that information. At Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. 7 minutes past the hour. Let's go back to the phone. Catherine joins us on the line from Canton. Hi, Catherine. Happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day to you, too.
Thank you. How can I help today?
Oh, my boyfriend and I have been looking into getting our first house, and I've been running into a bit of a brick wall on the whole subject. We've tried to get pre-approved with about two different banks. One wouldn't give us calls back because my boyfriend has just switched jobs recently, and I'm running into an issue with my personal credit. It's not that it's bad. It's just I've been very obsessive over the years of not borrowing money and getting things if I don't need it. It's fantastic for not paying bills and really, really awful for trying to get a loan.
So let's back up a little bit. You and your boyfriend, are you buying this house to live in or is it an investment?
A little bit of both, actually. We're looking at using it as a main residence for the next few years, and if we need to move out of the state or anywhere else, then we're going to turn it over and use it as an investment property.
Okay.
And either use a broker or lease it ourselves. Just due to the fact that the home prices are so low right now, we'll easily be able to make back whatever the mortgage is in rent every month.
Good. I love that because, as you know, if you listen to my show on Sundays, I'm a huge fan of people buying property now. But I want to talk about you and your relationship with your boyfriend. Are you guys engaged? Are you getting married? How are you handling the partnership? Because buying real estate with somebody, if you're married, is one thing. Buying real estate with a non-married partner, and you could be gay, straight, best friends, cousins, family members, or boyfriend and girlfriend, is quite another issue. And there are a lot of other things that you have to protect yourself on when you do this as a non-married partner than if you're married. So I'm just wondering where you guys are.
Well, we've been best friends for probably close to 7 or 8 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been dating 4 years come February. And we set a goal back when we first started to really get serious into the relationship that we were going to give it 5 years. And then that would be the point that we would decide one way or the other. But we haven't had any issues, anything like that. We're just sticking to that plan, because we've seen so many of our friends sit there and go into a relationship, get married a year and a half afterwards, 2 years, and then having to watch them go through divorce. So we're kind of terribly paranoid about that. So
you know, it's interesting. You're obsessive. I'm just going to throw this out there. Just as an armchair psychologist, you're obsessive about your relationship the way you are about your credit. Right? It's like, okay, here's what I'm going to do, and I'm not going to go outside of that, and so I'm not going to have any debt, I'm not going to carry any debt, and oops, now here I am trying to buy a house. That might not have been the best course of action. Just saying, you seem to have a very similar point of view, and that's fine. Let me just say it again, though, because I want you to really hear this. Buying property with somebody you're not married to requires an entire other set of instructions, paperwork, things that you have to plan for, because you're unmarried partners. This is not a moral issue whatsoever. It's about protecting you. So you've now seen your friends who break up and how messy that is. Add a house to it. And come read some of my thousands of the emails that I have received over the years, or listen to the phone calls that I have gotten from unmarried partners, again, gay, straight, family members, doesn't matter, who buy property together, and then somebody loses a job, somebody decides to move, they decide to break up, they can't sell the house, they can't rent the house, one person stops putting in money, and the other person's really sunk. I can give you 100 bad things that could happen, and all I'm saying is, before you make this move to buy a house, you guys have to have a very serious conversation about who's going to put in what, who's going to be responsible for what, and if you decide to part ways at the end of the 5 years, who gets the house, who's responsible for the house, and all of that has to be in writing, signed, before you guys go buy property.
Okay.
Have you had those conversations?
We have, actually.
Great. So have you put the paperwork together?
We have not done that yet. We were waiting until we could get pre-approved just to look at exactly what we're aiming for. We're actually looking at buying almost an investment-style property and mm-hmm. working on that to where we can move into it, something along the lines of between $50,000 and $85,000, nothing more than that.
I love the planning. I love that you're doing all this planning and that you've started to have these conversations. I'm just, you know, you called me, so I'm just going to tell you, get it all done before you buy the house. Now, let's talk about buying this house, because, or whatever it is, your type of property you're going to buy. You might have some very serious problems until he's at least 6 months in, and your credit gets to where it needs to be. So you shouldn't have bad credit unless you've never had a credit card or you've never had a car loan of any sort, even if you've paid it off or pay in time, on time and in full every month. Do you just not have any credit at all?
Nope, no credit at all. Everything that I've bought, I've had the cash saved up for and put down for it then. I've never had a credit card. I've tried applying a couple of times, but I always get turned down because they try to pull up my credit report and there's literally nothing there. There's no credit on me whatsoever. It's like I'm a ghost.
Right. So that's going to be a pretty long-term issue for you.
Right.
How old are you, Catherine?
I'm going to be 25 in October.
25. Okay. It's time for you to actually build credit, because if you don't start building your credit now, you're never going to have credit. So I'm thrilled that you've never borrowed a penny, but you can see that's going to be kind of a problem now.
Yeah.
And as we move into a cashless society, which is where I think we're going, you are going to have more and more need for credit, even if you pay it off in full at the end of the month. So someone along the way told you that, you know, and imprinted on you that credit was bad. But I have to tell you, I think credit can be enormously useful. It's useful if you start a business. It's useful if you want to buy a car. It's useful if you want to buy an airplane ticket over the internet. You know, it's useful for a whole lot of things, and it's useful to be able to qualify for a house. So I'm going to recommend something to you, because it could take you years to establish enough credit to actually qualify for a mortgage.
Okay.
And that's going to be your problem.
Yeah.
So there's a company that I work with called eCredable. eCredable. And they work with people like you who have zero credit. And Steve Ely, who's the president, used to run the personal finances division of Equifax, and he's been at this company for a bunch of years. And I've created content for this site, and I set it on an advisory board. Because what they do is take people like you who should have stellar credit, And what they do is they basically give you an alternative credit score that you can then use to get a loan from their approved company. So Dave Ramsey, do you listen to Dave Ramsey a lot?
Every once in a while at night when I'm coming home.
Right. So you're like a Dave Ramsey grade A person, right? So Dave Ramsey, well, because you have no credit, right?
One of those things.
One of those things, right. So Dave Ramsey really likes eCredible, and he likes what we do on the site, but he also likes Churchill Mortgage, and Churchill Mortgage has is part of this whole eCredible system. So you can go to eCredible, and you can sign up for them, and then you can start to put in all your information, and they will give you an alternative credit score that you can then use with, like, a Churchill Mortgage to get a real loan. Your boyfriend is going to have to wait till he's at least 6 months out or 6 months in this job, provided he has regular credit, right, to be able to,
yeah.
Right, to be able to be a part of this.
Okay.
To be able to qualify. So that's kind of what's going on. The two of you, unfortunately, I don't think are going to have, an easy time of it. I wish it were different. I wish you would have an easy time of it, but I'm not so sure that you will. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm in the process of talking to one bank now, and we got a semi-response back, and that's pretty much what they told me I needed to do is find things to put on my to do as an alternate form of credit, because other than that, I've got nothing else to go off of.
Right. So alternative credit is becoming more and more known, which is great. Unfortunately, it's not quite there yet. And so companies like eCredible, and there are three or four of them out there, help try and fill this gap. But one thing you have to understand is that lenders are required to consider alternate credit. They are absolutely required to consider it. Your challenge is to put it in a way and get it together so that they will consider you. So a company like eCredible helps with that.
Okay. Do you think I would have better luck once I get everything taken care of and possibly 6 months down the line once he's been in his job for a little longer?
You have to get credit. You've got to start at the ground zero and try and get a gas card or a secured credit card. And it could take you 2 or 3 years to develop enough credit to be able to qualify for a FICO score and a loan.
Okay.
So I don't think 6 months will help you. 6 months for him, though, once he's in his job, as long as he has credit, he can qualify. But then if he qualifies and you don't, he's on title and you're not. That is its own set of challenges if you're supposed to be contributing to this property. And that gets back to where I started, which is who's doing what, who's putting in what money, who's responsible for what happens if you break up at the end of the five-year period or you get married, it's all fine, and how does that get translated into paper so that you are protected? And that's really what I care about.
All right. Well, I guess I've got some things to talk to him about when I get home tonight.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Catherine. Have a great Labor Day. It's 18 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. David joins us on the line from Gainesville. Hi, David.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Listen, here's my issue. I'm a contractor that did some work on a home in Cobb County. Vacant home, pending a sale. There's a contract on the house. The homeowner's in Pennsylvania. The work was done last Tuesday, and per contract, it's payment upon completion. Now, I'm being dragged, and I feel that they might sell the home, and I might not get paid.
Well, then you should file a lien. So if you,
okay.
As a contractor, you have the right to file a lien against the property.
That'll stop the sale?
Yes, it'll stop a sale. They have to actually pay you off or get rid of you before they can close on the sale.
Okay.
So you would want to file a contractor's lien, mechanic's lien, for whatever the amount is, and then they'll see that lien, and then they'll know that you're not kidding. But you feel that you just are not going to get paid somehow?
I do. Stories from the realtor involved, the relocation company involved. There's a relocation company involved for this fire. And the homeowner, it just... Everything's not adding up.
All right. Well, so you should immediately take steps and file a contractor's lien in that state. Make sure that the lien is done correctly so that you can collect the money that you're owed. It's not all that. Fortunately, it's not all that complicated, and that is the fastest way to make sure that everybody is put on notice that you're owed money. 20 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. I'll be back with more on News Talk WSB. 2:25 on Labor Day. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining us. 404-872-0750 is our number. Let's go back to the phones. Mary joins us on the line. So, Mary, your daughter wants to buy a condo?
Well, that's the question. Should she? She's getting a lot of mixed advice because she lives in an apartment where the rent goes up significantly for the last several years. And some people think that she should start looking for a condo.
Who are some people?
Brothers, relatives, friends. And I don't know enough to know how to advise her. But I do know that in Atlanta, in our market, sometimes the resale is not easy on a condo, and should she get married in the next few years, she might be saddled with that and then be in a place that wouldn't allow for, you know,
for husbands?
Or wouldn't allow for renting. She probably would only be able to buy a small place, too small for a potential husband.
Well, it depends on the size of the husband, I suppose, and how many bags he brings with him.
He couldn't bring very many.
So my first question is, why are you calling and not your daughter?
I don't know the answer to that question. Except I'm fretting unduly, and I don't know.
Why are you fretting unduly about this, Mom?
Well, because I think she is spending more than on this property and, of course, getting nothing for it. But on the other hand, I just don't know that a purchase for someone of a moderate income, she has good credit and she has no debt. But
what's a moderate income?
In the low 50s.
That's great. I mean, the typical condo in Atlanta, you could buy a great one for 50 grand.
Well, I mean, I know so little. How much do you put down? Are condo mortgages hard to get?
All right. So first of all, your daughter needs to read my book, Buy, Close, Move In.
I ordered two of your books.
Good. Reading will help her and you. Secondly, I think she has to be ready to be settled for the next 3 to 5 years. And she should buy a place that's big enough for the potential husband who's going to walk through the door.
Okay.
So, two bedroom, two bath is ideal. It's easier to sell. And she needs to really think about what it means to own property and what it means to be a landlord, because it ain't easy all the time, as everybody in Atlanta has figured out. Right? It's tough. So, thinking about it is good, but if it's going to keep you awake at night, not even talking about your daughter, you awake at night, I'm not sure it's a good move for her. She has to decide what's right for you, and you have to step back and let her make her own mistakes or her own successes and support her all the way. Reading my books is going to be great for both of you. I promise. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Blank. With a little Dolly Parton, we'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
p.m. this Labor Day Monday. So glad you could join me here on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glink. Hanging in for Clark today. He'll be back tomorrow. You can join me online, my website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. You can find me on Twitter, where we're having quite the conversation. It's a little fair tax mixed in with a little 9 to 5, at Glink, at GLINK. Follow me there to get all the tweets that we are putting out. Plus, this is where I send the links and the phone numbers and all the rest for everybody who calls. Other parts of the ThinkLink community include CBS News and Money Watch. You can find my weekly blog there. Actually, it's about 3-4 times a week now. We're blogging about all kinds of stuff going on. And then over at Yahoo and the Equifax Finance blog, where we have amazing free information from real experts in the areas who just what you need, everything that needs to, that relates and works with credit. So insurance, investing, real estate, obviously credit, taxes, and family money. All of that great information from experts in those fields over at the Equifax Finance blog, blog.equifax.com. All right, 404-872-0750. It looks like we're going to move on to real estate. Let's see if we can get some of your calls in here. Mark joins us on the line from Woodstock. Mark, you have a refi question?
Yeah, I have a question about refinancing a house after a successful Chapter 13 discharge.
Okay.
My Chapter 13 was discharged in March, I think, this year. I've called my bank, tried to refinance. Of course, they don't want to have anything to do with it for 2 years. Talked to a credit union. They don't want to have anything to do with it for 4 years. I was wondering if, is there a way I can go about getting a refinance to my bank, or is there banks out there that will handle this type of thing, or...
You can look, but I don't think you're going to find much, and that's because bankruptcy is one of those third rail issues. And the idea being that a bank is like, well, you've been in bankruptcy. There's a financial penalty for going through that.
Right.
And so they're just not. 2 years is about the minimum I've heard. In fact, I'm kind of surprised that you're going to get somebody at 2 years to refinance you. You can look around. You can talk to a mortgage broker. Maybe there's somebody else who can help. What is the interest rate you're paying?
I have two mortgages. My second one I owe about $20,000 on, and it's almost at 8%.
Okay.
And my first is at 6.25%. I owe about $120 on it.
Okay. So
it's not like I can't afford it or anything. I'm just looking, you know, to put a little bit more money in my pocket. So.
Well, of course. I mean, who wouldn't want to pay less? I mean, that's,
right.
You know, nobody wants to pay more. Everybody wants to pay less. You know, I think you can look around and see if there's going to be somebody who's going to be willing to help you. But my sense of it is you're going to find there's this financial penalty, and if you find somebody, you know, the least amount of time is probably going to be 2 years.
Okay,
but keep looking.
That's kind of what I'm getting everywhere.
Yeah. So I'm sorry about that. How did you end up in Chapter 13?
Oh, God. Just being irresponsible.
Oh, well. As long as it's got an easy answer.
Yeah,
Have you learned your lesson?
Yes, I've learned my lesson.
What would you say is the number one thing you're doing differently today?
I don't feel that I need credit because now I have cash.
Interesting.
So I think that's kind of the big thing. I just don't feel like I need to deal with credit when I have cash. So
in other words, you're only buying things that you have money for.
Correct.
But you're not getting. Did you get rid of all your credit cards?
No, I have one credit card, but even if I max it out, it's a $1,200 limit. If I max it out in a month, I pay it off that month.
Okay. So just don't run into a situation like Catherine, who we talked to earlier in the hour, who is trying to get a loan, but she has zero credit, no credit cards, no credit at all, no FICO score, can't get a credit, right? She can't get any credit. She can't qualify for a house. For you...
Yeah, I'm actually pretty surprised everybody on the phone wants to sell me a car.
I'm sure they do, because now your credit is being cleaned up. But you just want to get your credit clean, so make sure you keep a credit card and use it occasionally, and just rebuild slowly. But I think you're going to be able to, in about a year and a half, or rather a year and a half from March, so you're already half year in, and about another year from now or so, and interest rates are still going to be low, you'll be in a lot better shape, and there'll be a lot of other people responding to you.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Just keep working to pay down that the second line of credit. That's the one you really have to get rid of. It is 2:40. Joy joins us on the line from Dallas. Hi, Joy. Joy, you with us?
Oh, yes, I am.
Hey, thanks for holding. What can I do for you today? This is the Elise Glink Show.
Hi, Elise. Thanks for being there. I really appreciate it. I have a CD that just came due, and one of the banks is offering me a higher interest rate because I'm a preferred customer, an additional 0.25.
Ooh, 0.025.
Right, no one else is doing that. I've checked everyone else. I've had this bank for years. And there's a, I'm thinking about a 144 for 4 years, 1.44, would give me a, with the 0.25, would give me 1.69. It's like quite a bit of money. Do I dare go? And I don't know where the economy is, what's going to happen with the government. Am I safe to put it there?
I would not put all that money. I wouldn't put all of my big pot of money in anywhere locked up for 4 years.
Not in a CD?
I wouldn't. Just because I don't think you will know what's going to happen in 4 years. I think interest rates are going to stay low for 2 years.
Right.
You know,
Well, what do I do with it? I mean, it's like $50,000.
Right.
And I don't know where to go with the market the way it is.
You know, you could put half of it in there, $25,000. And
I've laddered it.
You've laddered it all.
I have. Yes, I have.
You know, at 1.69%, you're not even staying, you're barely staying even with inflation.
Right.
So you're basically going to be losing money on this.
I don't know where else to go with it.
I don't either, but I'm just saying that's why locking it up is not my preferred choice.
Right. And they say if the interest rates go up within 2 years, you can change it to a higher interest rate. You have that option.
Okay.
I don't see it. Personally,
well,
I don't see
interest rates going up, so at least not for the next 2 years.
Exactly.
And after that, I don't know, because, you know, my crystal ball is kind of cracked.
Right.
So
is mine.
Right. So if you want to do this, you know, it's 4 years feels like a long period of time to me. Mm-hmm. But if they're going to give you a one-time upload or whatever you want to call it, where you can
move
it up, not so bad.
Right. Because I have others that are just a year, 2 years, I'm trying to ladder.
I just like that it's laddered, and I want to make sure you have other cash available to you.
I do.
So, okay. I don't love it.
And what is the government? What happens with this economy and Obama staying in? Excuse me, but...
What if Obama stays in? What if Romney and Ryan get elected and actually do what they say they're going to do?
I know.
Okay?
I know.
What if we don't fix the fiscal cliff, no matter who gets elected at the end of the year? I think, you know, this is really kind of scary. I started the show talking about how scared I was about this, you know, the end of 2012 into 2013 and the tough choices that need to be made, and how I really don't think there's any political will on any side to actually do it, and I don't think there's people will either. I don't think we have the political will to do it, what needs to be done. So I don't know that it matters so much who gets elected.
Right.
It really matters whether we're going to all decide to act like grown-ups or not. So if we're going to act like grown-ups, then... You know, then it's going to be painful. If we don't act like grown-ups, I think it's going to be really painful. So that's my take on the economy. Wish it were better.
I should have taken this part of it and put it in gold already.
Yeah, but gold has already come down from its high, right? So what makes gold go up? The real question is, what's going to happen with Europe and China? Because I think that even if the euro destabilizes, even if we end up with like a new euro of stronger countries and a weak euro of weaker countries... like a two-tiered euro, I think, or it stays where it is and we just kind of muddle along for another couple of years. That Europe is such a big part of the world's economy, and it's so destabilizing and demoralizing for everything, for everybody.
Right.
That it's worth getting nervous about, right? I mean, it's just Angela is doing what she can, but it's worth getting nervous about. And so I think we're going to just have to watch and see how it all plays out. I'm not sure, again, the political will to do what Angela wants to do, Angela Merkel, what she wants to do. I just don't think the political will exists in her country, and she's got to stand for re-election. So everybody makes moves based on what's going to keep them in power, and it's absolutely the worst thing to do.
All right. Well,
sometimes you just have to look above and beyond.
With this money, what happens, like, they're covered for $250, or the government stands behind it? I mean,
government stands behind it, you're not going to lose money. You're going to put in your $50,000, and you're going to get out your $50,000 plus whatever the 1.69% interest is.
Right, right.
I don't think anything is there. Their $50,000 in 4 years is going to be worth less because there's going to be inflation, at least some modicum of inflation. But that's how it is. All you're doing is trying to be safe.
Right, exactly.
You're not really making any money. So as long as you understand that, then you're okay.
I'm making something better than what I can do elsewhere.
It is. But, what are we talking about, 1/4%?
Right. It's not really
like we're all making money here. We're just trying not to lose money. And,
exactly.
And not losing money, I think, is sort of the key thing to follow. Thanks for your call, Joy. 404-872-0750. Let's see if we can answer a couple more calls. Jim joins us on the line from Gainesville. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning, or good afternoon, excuse me.
Good afternoon. What can I do for you today?
Well, we have a modification loan.
You got a loan mod?
Yep. I got that a couple of years ago, and we'd lost a job after I moved and bought a house in Gainesville. lost the job that same month.
Wow. That must have been absolutely terrifying for you and your wife.
Well, yeah, it wasn't real cool.
yeah, he said, understating it.
She come home from work one day, and my wife's sitting on the floor, painting the dining room wall there down by the and she looks like a new bride. And here we go. I have to tell the story.
Wow. I don't envy you. That must have been a very tough day for you.
Yeah, it wasn't good. But anyway, we looked to other things to keep us strong.
Mm-hmm.
And another source. But anyway, God's been good to us over the years, and we got a modification loan. It took us over a year, 18 months to get a modification loan.
Okay.
My original company went belly up, and then the next company, they turned it over, and now it's with another company. So anyway, my modification loan is 2.5% right now. But it's going to
it's going to go up to what, 5.5%?
Yes, I think so. And
okay.
So it's going to have that change. Now, what I'd like to be able to do is to get another loan, a permanent loan. If I can get something in the 3.5%,
you can't. Jim, you can't. You will not be able to. So, first of all, you've had a loan modification, and you're in that right now, and you're only allowed one. The house probably doesn't have any equity in it, right?
Well, yes, I went in with about over 100 equity.
Yeah, but has it fallen in value?
It's fallen down, and I could more than break even right now. So.
You could try to refinance, and you could try to do a HARP refinance, but the HARP refinances are only going, for people who do them, about 4.5%. So you're at 2.5%, and you're going to start paying 4.5%. That's not in the right direction for you?
No.
So I think you keep what you have, and maybe in another year, you can try to do a real refinance. Not in the HARP program, but maybe you'd have enough equity built back up because prices would hopefully go up a little bit. You're paying down your loan.
How much equity should I be able to have on that?
They want to see at least 5 to 10%. And then the problem with that is you got the 5 to 10% equity, but then you need private mortgage insurance.
Yes.
So unless you have 20% in, private mortgage insurance has gotten really expensive because all of those companies took a bath.
I'm thinking that I have... I think BMI is already in what I've got right now.
Well, you can go and price it out and see, but you've got to have 5 to 10% in equity in the house to do a refinance. Ideally, it's 20%, but 5 to 10% is an absolute must. So
okay.
You have to go and see and what that looks like and then what the interest rate is and then realize that you're going to pay more than you would be paying if you just keep the loan mod that you have for the next couple of years. I would rather see you keep the loan mod and pump the extra money into the equity of the property than...
Unfortunately, there's no extra money.
Well, there you go. So you don't want to pay more. And that's that's what's going to happen right now. So
we're just thinking, trying to think ahead, but...
I know. I know. Listen, you keep the faith. Keep looking around for solutions. If you want to look at... the rules for the Home Affordable Refinance Program, the HARP program, go to makinghomeaffordable.gov. It's the place you probably went to look at your loan mod, makinghomeaffordable.gov, and you can read about the HARP rules. You can even talk to lenders. It never hurts. Doesn't cost anything to talk. You want to talk to them and figure out if there is something that we just don't know about that you can qualify for. I am all in favor of that. But I don't want you paying more now than you absolutely have to. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. Be back right away on News Talk WSB. 57 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Clark today. So we are, nearly at the end of the show. If I didn't get a chance to take your call, I'm sorry about that. Please tune in, Sundays, of course, you can call in, or you can email me at my website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. You know, if you're looking for information on real estate, as one of our callers was today, Mary, for her daughter, and you're looking to invest in real estate, I have a whole group of real estate, investing in real estate ebooks for sale at Amazon for the amazing bargain price of $2.99. It's 5 ebooks. The individual ebooks are 99 cents each, or you can get the whole thing for like $2.99 if you just want one. And those you can find at Amazon.com. And they're a great place to start if you want to take advantage of this, the single best time to buy investment real estate ever. Bar none, we will never see this time come again once it's gone and the next 3 million properties pass through this marketplace. This will be the time 20 years from now when you are telling your children and grandchildren about how you got your start investing in real estate and how it all happened at the bottom of the market after the Great Recession. You're going to be able to tell them you took advantage and stepped up. So start with these ebooks, my ebooks on investing in real estate at Amazon. And you can follow me online at Twitter, which is really where all the information comes from these days or pushes out through, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Well, I'm going to go enjoy the rest of my Labor Day, throw a little going away party for my son, Alex, and I will be back in the saddle Sunday with another episode of the Elise Glink Show on at our new time, noon to 2, because guess what? It's football season. So we're going to follow football, or football Sunday brunch, and happy to have you join us. And in the meantime, I'll see you online. Have a great Labor Day, everybody. Hannity is next.